Imagine you're looking at the blueprint of a house.
Yep.
Like, you know exactly where the load-bearing walls are, you know how the plumbing routes, and it all feels, well, incredibly solid.
Right, you know the layout.
Exactly. But what if the concrete foundation beneath those walls is quietly just entirely rearranging itself?
Oh, wow.
The house looks the same, but the ground it sits on is fundamentally different. It's Wednesday, July 22, 2026, and the next 15 minutes we're cutting through the Taken Morning Report to show you exactly how this foundational shift is happening, like right now.
Yeah.
And we are saving you the time of digging through the raw data yourself.
Which is a lot of data today, and we are crossing a really crucial threshold today, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, the industry is moving past the era where technology was, mostly about securing capital through impressive demos.
Right, the hype phase.
Exactly, the hype phase. We are entering an era where these underlying advancements are quietly becoming fundamental load-bearing business infrastructure.
Okay, let's unpack this and let's start with the software layer. Google just dropped Gemini 3.6 Flash.
Right.
And the headline here isn't like a new modality or some massive leap in reasoning capabilities. The headline is pure operational efficiency.
Pure efficiency.
They achieved a 17% reduction in output tokens. And they dropped the API pricing by 20% compared to version 3.5.
Wow.
Yeah, so we are now looking at $1.50 per million input tokens and $7.50 per million output tokens.
Which fundamentally alters the unit economics of deploying AI at scale.
Right. I mean, that's huge for a medium-sized company. They could
Yeah.
be saving, what, 15 to 20 grand a month with this?
Easily. And when we talk about a 17% reduction in output tokens, we really need to look at how these models actually work under the hood.
Okay, break that down for us.
Well, it isn't just the model choosing to use fewer words, A large language models generate text autoregressively.
Predicting the next token based on everything that came before it.
Exactly. So a 17% output reduction means Google has refined the model's routing algorithm. It is finding a much shorter mathematical path through its latent space to arrive at the exact same semantic conclusion.
It's almost like paying per word in a telegram back in the day, right?
Yeah.
You want to get the exact same message across, but with fewer, better chosen words.
That's a perfect analogy.
So it's like measuring the computational distance between a problem and a solution.
Right.
In older models, the AI might take a winding scenic route through its neural network to answer a query.
It came its time.
Yeah, but with 3.6 Flash, it's taking a direct highway.
Yeah.
You get the same clarity, but you burn 17% less compute to get there.
And Google is slicing this up for different environments too.
Right, the specific releases.
Yeah.
They pushed Flashlight for instant responses, like for edge devices needing zero latency.
Which is critical for mobile.
Yeah, and then there's Flash Cyber, which is strictly restricted to government and security entities. Total air gap stuff.
That segmentation makes total sense given the varied demands of the market. Flash Cyber specifically addresses the data sovereignty concerns that have kept defense contractors off commercial APIs.
Okay, but look, I got to push back on this release slate because something is glaringly absent.
I know what you're going to say.
Where is Gemini 3.5 Pro?
Yeah.
I mean, Google is officially teasing that Gemini 4 is under development. They are pushing out these highly optimized 3.6 Flash models, but they are completely holding back their flagship. Why?
What's fascinating here is that it comes down to asymmetric reputational risk.
Reputational risk.
Yeah. In 2026, the AI arms race has matured. You have OpenAI heavily signaling GPT-5, and Anthropic's Claude architecture is dominating complex coding
So
benchmarks.
everyone's watching Google like a hawk.
Exactly. If Google releases a flagship 3.5 Pro model prematurely and it hallucinates or it completely breaks down on multi-step reasoning tasks,
The enterprise market will just instantly migrate away.
instantly. The fact that they are holding it back tells us that absolute reliability now outweighs raw capability.
They can't afford a flop.
No, they are optimizing for a zero defect launch because the market will no longer tolerate beta level performance in a flagship product.
And that drive for software efficiency, it's directly tied to a massive bottleneck in the physical world, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Software needs iron.
Right. Pushing those tokens faster requires immense thermal and memory overhead, which brings us perfectly to the actual hardware foundation.
Semiconductor revival.
Yes. This week, the semiconductor market absolutely exploded. Micron stock surged 12% on Monday.
12% in one day.
They bolted $15 billion onto their market cap in a single trading session, and that dragged the entire Philadelphia Semiconductor Index up 5.5%.
Which is a huge recovery after that nasty 20% dip we saw over the summer.
Yeah, and the TechIn report projects the AI chip market hitting $45 billion this year and topping $100 billion by 2028. ASML and Applied Materials followed right behind Micron, up like 6 to 8%.
It's a massive rally. And to understand why Micron specifically is triggering this surge, you have to look at the von Neumann bottleneck.
Okay, wait, explain that bottleneck real quick.
So in modern AI infrastructure, the actual processing cores, the GPUs built by NVIDIA or AMD, they are incredibly fast.
Right.
But they are constantly starving for data. They process information faster than the memory chips can actually feed it to them.
So they're just sitting there waiting.
Exactly. And Micron manufactures high bandwidth memory, or HBM. They physically stack DRAM chips on top of each other and connect them with microscopic vertical wires to increase the data transfer rate.
Wow, literally stacking them.
Yeah, you simply cannot scale an AI data center right now without HBM.
Okay, but let me ask you about the timing of this capital influx.
Yeah.
We saw that 20% dip over the summer. Are we sure this 12% surge isn't just institutional investors being overly greedy?
You mean like buying the dip and temporarily pumping the stock?
Exactly.
Right.
Like how much of this demand is speculative versus structural?
The demand is heavily structural.
Really?
Yeah. If we compare this to the volatile tech booms of the early 2020s, the current infrastructure buildout has maintained a highly consistent growth curve for 18 months now.
So it's not just a flash in the pan?
Not at all. Every single API call to Gemini 3.6 flash, every enterprise chatbot, it requires physical memory cycles. We are seeing a parallel to the fiber optic build-out of the late 90s internet boom.
Oh, interesting.
But instead of laying dark fiber that might go unused, cloud providers are deploying servers that are immediately saturated with operational workloads. The sustainable business models backing the hardware demand, they're already proven.
The capital required to sustain that operational demand is staggering.
It is.
But, you know, the way the capital is flowing right now is kind of bizarre.
It's highly unusual.
Because while billions are pouring into semiconductor hardware, money is simultaneously flooding into cryptocurrency. Bitcoin just hit a 5-week high of $66,300. There were $727 million in ETF inflows in just one single week.
Massive numbers.
The total crypto market cap is sitting back at $2.3 trillion, with Ethereum hitting $1,929. Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
The correlation.
Yeah, it's like watching two rival sports teams suddenly executing the exact same play. Normally, the correlation coefficient between tech equities and crypto sits around, what, 0.4 to 0.6?
Exactly. They are distinct asset classes, typically.
But today, that correlation spiked to 0.75. They are moving in near lockstep.
They really are.
So what's the why here? Are they actually coordinating their steering? Or just being lifted by the exact same current?
It's the current. The macroeconomic current right now is a combination of easing U.S. inflation and a significant drop in recession fears.
Right, which heavily signals upcoming Federal Reserve rate cuts.
Yes. Cheaper borrowing costs push institutional capital out of bonds and into risk-on assets across the board. But crypto has its own specific localized catalyst driving that $727 million in ETF inflows.
The Crypto Clarity Act moving through the U.S. Congress.
Exactly. Now, to be completely objective, we are looking at the Clarity Act purely as a driver of institutional optimism.
Right, right. Just to be totally clear to you listening, we are not taking any stance on the politics of that legislation. We're just reporting on the market mechanics.
Strictly neutral. From a purely mechanical perspective, institutional money like pension funds and major family offices, they operate under strict fiduciary duties.
Right. They can't just gamble.
No. They cannot allocate billions of dollars into an asset class that lacks a defined regulatory framework.
Yep.
The specific provisions in the Clarity Act provide the compliance scaffolding that these institutions require.
So when the probability of legal clarity increases,
the compliance friction decreases, allowing that pent-up institutional capital to flow directly into the ETFs.
Okay, but wait. If that correlation coefficient is sitting at 0.75, that entirely shatters the idea of portfolio diversification for a lot of retail investors, doesn't it?
That is the hidden danger here, yes.
Like, if you are holding an AI-heavy tech portfolio and a crypto portfolio, you might think you have two separate safety nets.
But you're essentially betting on the exact same macroeconomic drivers from two different angles.
Right. A macro shock doesn't hit those portfolios differently. It wipes them both out simultaneously.
Investors holding both might be far less diversified than they think. Diversification only protects you if the underlying assets react to stress differently.
Man. Okay. So, we have massive data centers being built, constrained by physical memory, and funded by a synchronized flood of macro capital.
Right.
But if you think investing billions into global server infrastructure is wild, wait until you look at what's happening in orbit to connect it all.
The transport layer.
It's exactly. Tomorrow, July 23rd, SpaceX is launching Starship Flight 13. And this isn't just a test flight. They are deploying the first operational batch of 20 Starlink V3 satellites.
And the physical scale of the V3 architecture dictates why Starship is really the only launch vehicle capable of this mission.
Because the previous V2 satellites weighed around 800 kilograms.
Yes, yes.
The V3s, they weigh 2,000 kilograms each.
They are absolute behemoths.
Massive.
But they bring 10 times the network capacity, download speeds up to 2 gigabits per second, and critical polar coverage.
Which is a huge upgrade.
But getting them to orbit requires surviving the ascent. And we just saw that July 16th launch abort, where 4 of the 33 Raptor engines on the Super Heavy booster failed to ignite at T0.
Yeah, the complexity of the Super Heavy booster cannot be overstated. You are dealing with 33 independent engines that must operate in perfect unison.
I was reading about the staging mechanics for this, and it is a nightmare of fluid dynamics. Mm-hmm. It's like conducting a symphony where every single instrument is a precisely controlled explosion. That's very true. Coordinating 33 Raptor engines isn't just about plumbing liquid oxygen and methane. It's about managing the resonant acoustic vibration of 33 continuous explosions so they don't literally shake each other apart on the launch meld.
Which is why that July 16th abort was actually, in a way, a successful demonstration of autonomous safety constraints.
Because it didn't blow up.
Right. The flight computers detected the ignition anomaly in milliseconds and shut down the entire sequence before it could tear the vehicle apart.
Elon Musk's engineering philosophy has always been to gather boundary data through failure.
Right, exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the real challenge isn't capability anymore, it's reliability. They are reaching a critical inflection point where the market needs predictability.
Yeah, I was looking at the actual success metrics, and Starship is currently at a 67% success rate, 8 successful flights out of 12 attempts.
Right.
But compare that to SpaceX's own Falcon 9, which operates at a 99.3% success rate.
That is a massive trust gap.
Yeah, NASA and commercial satellite operators are not going to trust billion-dollar payloads to a rocket that succeeds 2/3 of the time.
Precisely. The goal of Flight 13 isn't to prove that Starship can lift heavy things. The physics of the lift capacity are mostly settled.
Right.
The goal is to aggressively close that reliability gap from 67% to the 99.3% standard. Every suborbital test, every engine abort, is data engineered to turn an experimental heavy lift vehicle into a boring, highly predictable freight train to orbit.
Okay, let's bring this conversation back down to Earth for a second. We are building this massive orbital transport layer and highly optimized AI data centers, but the endpoint of all this technology are personal PCs.
Right, the edge nodes.
Yeah, they require severe local resilience. If the local machine fails, the entire global infrastructure is basically useless to the user. All this relies on our local machines actually working and our culture being preserved.
And we saw a major shift in edge resilience today. Microsoft just released Windows 11 version 24H2.
And the marquee feature is point-in-time restore.
Yes. This is a significant evolution from legacy system restores that just, you know, backed up registry keys or required you to copy your entire hard drive onto an external disk.
The mechanism they are using here is intelligent delta compression, right?
Exactly.
Instead of copying all your files, the operating system sits at the lowest level of the storage drive and tracks block level changes. It gives you a literal time machine for your PC.
It only records the exact microscopic blocks of data that change from minute to minute.
It's perfectly preserving the state of the machine, every open window, every file, without eating up terabytes of storage space.
Yeah.
So if a bad driver update bricks your system or ransomware encrypts your drive, you just roll back to yesterday.
It creates a highly resilient local environment. However, we also have to objectively address the other side of this update.
Ah, the recall feature.
Right, the enhancements to the Microsoft recall feature on Copilot Plus PCs. Recall continuously takes snapshots of your screen to build a searchable 3-month visual history of your activity.
Which caused quite a bit of controversy.
a severe tension in the market. And again, maintaining strict neutrality here, we see privacy advocates arguing that storing 3 months of visual telemetry introduces an unprecedented surveillance vulnerability,
right?
While Microsoft maintains that the architecture relies entirely on strict local encryption where the data never leaves the device.
So it's an active ongoing tension between the desire for convenience and the concerns over privacy. We're not taking a side, just highlighting the debate.
Exactly. But it brings up this broader, elegant concept of digital preservation.
Yeah.
We are using delta compression to preserve our personal system data from disaster, but we're also using digital architecture to preserve our cultural history.
Because tomorrow, Halo, Campaign Evolved, launches in Unreal Engine 5 for $29.99.
Yes.
They took the 2001 Halo mechanics and completely rebuilt it. They kept the exact physics, the exact hitboxes, the exact AI pathing, but wrapped it in modern 4K 120 frames per second visuals.
It's a fascinating way to save classic intellectual property for a whole new generation. Although from a market perspective, they are facing a severe headwind.
Splatoon Raiders.
Yep. It drops on the exact same day. Industry analysts are modeling a 15 to 20% cannibalization of first week sales for both properties due to the overlap.
Gamers are going to have to allocate their time carefully this weekend. But looking at Windows 11 and the Halo remake side by side, it perfectly illustrates two forms of digital preservation. You know?
Completely.
So what does this all mean? We started by talking about the foundation of our digital house shifting. Today, we've dissected how AI is achieving massive output efficiency.
Through algorithmic routing, yeah.
We've looked at the physical memory bottlenecks driving the semiconductor hardware boom. We mapped how macro liquidity is forcing tech and crypto to move in lockstep.
Shattering traditional diversification.
Right. We analyzed the fluid dynamics of pushing heavy orbital infrastructure into space, and we broke down how delta compression is making our local endpoints practically invincible.
It's a lot of shifting concrete.
For you, the listener, the technology barrier to entry has never been lower. Whether you are a developer using Gemini 3.6 to earn global dollar income on Upwork, or you are an investor tracking macro tech crypto correlations, the digital economy is now entirely borderless.
And the defining characteristic of this shift is that while the machines are doing the processing, the silicon, the LLMs, the orbital relays, it is human beings that create the meaning.
Absolutely.
In a landscape that is physically and mathematically rearranging itself this rapidly, adaptability and continuous learning are the new required currencies.
I want to leave you with a completely new thought to ponder today, building on everything we just broke down.
Okay, let's hear it.
We are building hyper-efficient AI in a massive commercial space economy simultaneously. What happens when these two specific vectors intersect?
Oh, wow.
Imagine a near future where autonomous AI agents are the ones actively managing, trading, and routing space-based satellite bandwidth in real time, completely without human intervention.
Just AI's negotiating protocol handshakes in orbit.
Exactly. If the foundation of our house is shifting that fast, who actually controls the infrastructure then?
That is a wild thought.
Keep diving deep, keep questioning the infrastructure around you, and we will catch you on the next one. Take care.